Well, good morning, everybody, and welcome to another edition of News You Can Use right here on WTIC News Talk 1080. I'm Ann Baldwin, and it's great to have you along with us today, and I'm so happy to have back in our studio again Dr. Tony Gasper, Superintendent of Schools for the City of New Britain. And you've got a big job. We've had you here before. We've talked about a lot of things, public education, and that's why it's great to have you back, Dr. Gasper.
Happy to be here.
So you've been in New Britain now 2 years?
A year and a half.
Yeah,
middle of my second year.
Okay, and before that you were?
I was the superintendent for Wolcott Public Schools for 7 years.
Okay, so we don't really call it a new job now, but it's a big job, right? Being a superintendent, regardless of where you're at, and you've been throughout the state, it's a big responsibility. Right now it's budget time. What are some of the biggest challenges facing public schools today in Connecticut?
The most pressing one that's happening right now for every school district in the nation, but perhaps hitting the urban school districts more than others, is the ending of the federal COVID monies.
No.
Districts like ours here in Connecticut, and I'm assuming across the nation, used those monies for extra programming, extra software, extra staff, extra activities and engagement for students. So those, as planned, are coming to an end, and districts like ours across the nation are dealing with that now.
Well, that's got to be tough, because think about it. Even if you're a homeowner or a family, right, and someone gives you a big chunk of money that you can only have for a short period of time. So you might do things to your home. You might add on things. You might add on kids. Who knows what you add on? And then it comes to an abrupt end. So what do you do? You got to go back? You got to rewind a little bit, or what?
That is basically what we're doing here. So I'll just speak specifically to New Britain. So the plans for the monies were done prior to my arrival, and people used their best ideas and their best judgment. Here again, prior to my arrival, the district hired almost 300 people with this temporary money, and I knew that when I applied for and was appointed to this job, so that wasn't a surprise to me. So we really began planning for the end of the monies right away. So in the previous budget season, in other words, making the budget that we're implementing right now for the current school year, I asked everybody who I call a budget owner, so those are school principals or district-wide department leaders, to cut their, the money's called ESSER, to cut their ESSER staff by half. Mm. So basically trying to make an off-ramp so we kind of learn to live without the federal dollars. So we're in that process now. We currently have a little bit less than half of the staff that we hired with these monies as we did in the previous school year. So we're going from 100% of those 300 to right now about 50% of those 300 to next year. Almost none. My budget has now been passed by the Board of Education and now moving on to the city. Out of those 300 or so staff members, I've recommended retaining about 39 of them. Because there's certainly, all of these people were providing really essential services
that were needed, especially after COVID,
correct.
During COVID, right?
Correct. So some of those needs have gone away or mm-hmm. have reduced. But it's also a fact that New Britain has a lot of need, and in some cases that need takes the form of staff. So I'm looking to retain people such as providing security services or behavior services. Some of them are teachers that were hired with some of these monies, assistant principals. So it's a variety of, it was a variety of staff members when it was at 300, and I'm recommending keeping just about 15% of what was totally hired.
You know, I don't think people understand that, you know, superintendents are really the CEO and the CFO of their districts, right? I think this is going to shock people. What are you looking at in the city of New Britain for public schools? What are you looking at as your overall budget?
So our the budget we're proposing locally for funded by the local taxpayers is a little more than $130 million. Our total budget is with grant funds from state and federal sources is about $200 million. And you're exactly right. People are often shocked when I often say, I'm a frequent shopper at Walmart, but I would have no clue how to run a Walmart. So when everybody has attended school and they've got kids or mm-hmm. grandkids that have attended or currently attend school, that doesn't always give you the full picture. One of the numbers I give people is, number one, even after we reduce the staff that I just talked about, we will have 1,600 staff members, right? That's a very large company. We serve nearly 20,000 meals a day, right? We have 9,700 kids. Every kid is offered breakfast and lunch. So it's easy if you've had your child or children go through a school, any school district, to lose the scope of exactly right. how big of an enterprise a school district is. And then the superintendent, as you say, is really charged with the overall management. And the challenge for any superintendent is expectations versus reality. We're expected to be an expert in everything. Yep. I like to say we're expected to see around corners and predict the future. All, of course, both are impossible. So to do my job well, it requires really heavily on a strong team. So people who are specialists in their field, I need them to teach me about curriculum, teach me about special ed, teach me about communications, teach me about school buses. Mm-hmm. And then I'm charged with giving appropriate and useful recommendations to the Board of Ed when they need to pass a policy or a budget. And I'm charged with making those management decisions when stuff reaches my office.
So I know that you work in close collaboration with Mayor Erin Stewart, too. You know, and she's a product. She's very proud of the New Britain public school system. And isn't that important, too? Because you get a lot of pushback. I mean, I've worked with a lot of schools over the years. And, you know, the people say, well, I don't have kids in school. That's too much money. You look at the per pupil student expenditure. I won't even make you say that number because that's huge. It's a big. Well, if you want to say it, say it. Well, what is it for you?
For us, it's relative. You know, everything is relative.
Okay.
So I think, and I actually have the numbers here with me in my budget document. But I think the top spending district in the state is the small town of Sharon because they don't have a lot of economy of scale. Mm-hmm. I think they spend about $49,000 per child.
A year.
Okay. And here we spend just under $16,000 per child per year.
Wow.
So we're not last. We're not the lowest in the state, but we're towards the bottom. Mm-hmm. And that is often a reflection of what is called the local ability to pay. So what is the kind of net grand list? So what is all the property in a city or a town worth? Mm-hmm. What's that city or town's ability to collect taxes on those properties? So to get back to your question, for every superintendent, a relationship with the municipality is critical, whether that's Mayor Stewart here or if you're in a town that has a town manager or mm-hmm. a town council. So, yeah, it's been a pleasure to work with Mayor Stewart. She's a good partner. We communicate often, both formally and informally. We had a meeting just earlier today talking about our school facilities. And that by law is something that neither the city nor the Board of Ed can do independently. By law, there has to be a collaboration there when you make these applications to the State Department of Education to build or renovate a school. Mm-hmm. It's required that the Board of Ed and the city government have collaborated. So whether it's on formal things like that or just keeping her apprised of the good and sometimes the bad things or the scary things that happen in a school district from time to time, I do what I can to make sure that she's not surprised when she's yep. at the grocery store or, you know, walking around town, right. that she's at least got the highlights of things that are happening.
That's good. There's no surprises, and that's huge. And then you've also got Representative Sanchez, who's also huge, because for a lot of districts, it's the reimbursements, it's the federal dollars, mm-hmm. it's the grant money. Mm-hmm. It's not all, education is not all taxpayer funded. There are extra dollars that come in that if those didn't come in, we'd be in pretty bad shape.
Yeah, sure. So just to clarify, they're not all locally funded, but they're all tax funded in some way, whether it be okay. federal, state, or okay. local taxes. So people like Representative Sanchez have been critical, most especially in our ability to renovate our schools. So I've worked in places, I've worked in a school district that actually had a school building condemned, and kids had to be evacuated, you know, overnight, and we had to find a new place to put those kids. That's not here. So thanks to really good support from Rep. Sanchez and other legislators in our delegation, we have been able to renovate schools like the beautiful Chamberlain School that just opened. A home school is coming up next, and that's not possible without legislation that helps lessen the burden on the local taxpayer with reimbursements from the state.
Absolutely. Let's talk a little bit about the misconceptions, and we'll use New Britain High School as an example. Again, I've had the pleasure of being in there, meeting some of the people, some of the teachers, some of the students. And I don't think that people, it's easy to criticize when you're on the outside, but you know, you've got to ask yourselves, the people that are listening today, when's the last time you walked the halls of your kid's school or your grandkid's school or your nephew's school, right? You don't know what's going on inside. And now it's gotten and it's evolved to a point where some of these kids, let's use, for example, the academies that you have at New Britain High School, where kids are in these state-of-the-art, you know, technology, healthcare systems, emergency response, you got a half of an ambulance in one of your classrooms, it's amazing. And these kids have the opportunity to learn a trade and or a profession. But here's the big nugget. Graduate with college credits, which are like golden, right? Mm-hmm. So parents need to understand that, you know, you got to take advantage of what's in the walls within your schools.
Yeah. I started my career and even my own high school experience was in a large high school. I started my career at Manchester High School, which at that time was the same size as New Britain High School is now. So there certainly can be, it's a busy place, it's a hectic place. There's a lot of stuff that happens, and sometimes the small number of scary things that happen are what form people's perceptions. Mm-hmm. I'm really doing what I can think of, what I can to try to change that. And you're exactly right. So there's a lot of huge benefits to being a big school too, because what that means is we have that economy of scale. So we can offer things like manufacturing courses where kids get to lay hands on, touch, use the same manufacturing, high-tech manufacturing machines that you would find in a local shop here in New Britain and or at the CCSU campus. Mm-hmm. In fact, one of our teachers who teaches those things at New Britain High School is adjunct professor at CCSU. So we know what those are like. So to be able to come out with the ability to be a CNA straight out of high school, we provide those opportunities. Training kids how to be first responders. What's really interesting there is, so our course is on being a first responder. Yeah, we have the cool things like an ambulance simulator. But also back to the partnerships is members of the New Britain Fire Department and the New Britain Police Department co-teach those classes with our teachers. We have a fantastic set of courses / club called Ed Rising, Educators Rising, which gives kids a huge head start into then hopefully going to a place like CCSU to becoming a teacher and then hopefully coming back to be a teacher here in New Britain. You know, courses in business. And then it's easy to forget, but equally important, the huge variety of courses in the arts and performing arts and the big, big variety of sports and other activities. If you have a kid who chooses to take, if he or she chooses to take advantage of all that's offered mm-hmm. at a school, at our school, it really can be quite a rich high school experience. And not every other choice that parents might look at for their kids, I think, can brag in that way. There's plenty of other good schools out there, but we think we want New Britain High School to be parents' first choice for high school, and we think it deserves to be.
Well, one of the things, too, is we expect, and I'm just, this is my opinion, we expect schools to do it all, you know, to pay attention to the mental health well-being, to feed our kids, to educate our kids. I mean, it's all your responsibility. You know, you put them on the bus, you drop them off, and then it's everybody else's responsibility to take care of the kids, which I want to just point to the parental and, more importantly, even the grandparental involvement. I mean, my granddaughter's in a school in Texas, and I give input, and I go there, and I'm the one that said, you're playing the trumpet, and you're taking advantage of these programs. That's what we have to do, because the value of that. I think you have one student right now at New Britain High School that has, what, 13 college credits?
36, I believe.
36. It is. 36 right. College credits, and she's, when she graduates. Can I put you on the spot? What's a dollar amount of that about?
Really depends. I think anywhere from $300 to $500 per credit.
Okay, so about $9,000. $9,000 that the caregiver or the parent doesn't have to if they go on to higher education, right? And then you've got some of these kids coming out of these academies that are being hired, you know, doing internships and being hired in manufacturing where they're doing their internships, and they're graduating high school and going right into a job. I mean, let's face it, college isn't for everybody.
Correct. Yeah. So we, again, a really nice strength of New Britain High School is we don't just cater to the kids who are interested in the trades or the kids who are interested in a four-year college. There truly is everything in between. Again, back to partnerships, not just with city government, but with city employers. We have really strong partnerships with local manufacturers, the hospital, local businesses. So kids who choose to pursue these academies, it's not required, but a lot of kids do, and they get to choose their academy, not only get instruction at school, but they get a chance for an internship, and most of those internships are paid. So sometimes there can be pressure within a family to have a student go to work because they need to contribute to their family. It's nice that a lot of our internships are actually paid internships where the kid's getting skills that they're going to take with them either straight to the workplace or onto college and then to the workplace, and they're also getting paid for it too.
That is nice. What do you think is one of the biggest misconceptions today of public education? Like you said, I mean, and you know, I worked in the news, and we used to say if it bleeds, it leads. You know, we go, you know, the news shows up for the bad stuff, but it's hard to get the good stories out there. And I know you do a great job of that internally on your website and pushing out the good information. What is one of the biggest misconceptions, do you think?
Well, I think you alluded to it a couple minutes ago. The misconception is that the schools can do it all. And as more and more needs have come up in society, sometimes I think almost the profession itself is to blame, we have leaned in. So for example, when you mentioned earlier, when it became obvious that many more kids were struggling with mental health, and this was even prior to the pandemic, public schools leaned in and they want to help because that's who we are. We're a profession of people who help kids for a living. And I think it would have been wise for us to pause and say, wait a minute, we're not staffed for this. We're not equipped for this. We're still going to do the very best we can. But in my opinion, that's an even greater opportunity for partnerships with the municipality. Is I'm quite happy to keep my doors open late or open them early in the morning. We're actually working on this now, having more of these outside third-party service provider firms come in and provide mental health services to our kids. But I'm not staffed for the current level of need, and I don't know many schools that are. So I think it was a little bit of a misconception by all involved, including some of the educators, to say, yeah, we're ready to help and we can help.
Yeah.
We wanted to help. We still, of course, do want to help. But there's a difference between the mental health staffing that we've traditionally had versus the need that many kids have at this point. And I think we've gone forward and let people think, oh yeah, kids will get their mental health needs met at school. And certainly we do a lot of that work.
Sure.
But traditionally we've been staffed for the kids who actually have a special education plan, an IEP, that mentions mental health. And we do an excellent job of that. We have school psychologists, social workers, school counselors. But for the students who have needs that are outside of a special ed plan, we haven't always been staffed to address those needs. And that's where right now we're working on bringing in outside providers. And again, basically just keeping our doors open, providing them a space so that school can be where they get some of these services. But those services are going to actually be provided by an expert third party because they have the staffing.
Right, of course. If you're just tuning in, we're talking to Dr. Tony Gasper, Superintendent of Schools for New Britain. You know, we've also got this, you know, the legislature, like I said, it's amazing to me some of the mandates that come in, and we should put a word in front of that, unfunded mandates. And now there's going to be a change in the whole kindergarten structure coming up in this legislative session. Talk a little bit about that and what people need to know about that.
So, yes, it's a big change for Connecticut. My understanding of it, though, it brings us a little bit more into line with the rest of the nation. I think we were one of five remaining states where a student did not have to have achieved his or her fifth birthday before starting kindergarten. We would, before the new law, students could be five as long as they were five basically at the new year at July 1. So that's a big change. It's a new law affecting every district in the state. Here, we're working hard to get the word out. So we've communicated publicly. We've communicated through our own pre-K sites. We've communicated through community pre-K sites, and we continue that push. It's a little bit tough to talk about because, unfortunately,
it's so different everywhere.
Exactly. The law isn't super narrow, so every school district is kind of making its own best guess as to how to implement this law. Here, if a child is already with us in a district pre-K or in one of our licensed community pre-Ks, they're already getting a certain type of assessment. We're going to accept that assessment. The law says if the parent requests early entry, in other words, for those kids, some people have taken to calling these kids the Burr babies because all those months end in B-E-R.
Okay.
a parent can still request, if the parent has a child whose birthday is between September 1 and the end of the calendar year, they can still request what we're calling early entry into kindergarten. We will receive that request. By law, we're required to give some type of assessment. If the kid's already in a one of those pre-Ks I mentioned,
it's already done.
It's already done, and we think most people are most kids will qualify to go into kindergarten. Our early data says somewhere between 89% and 92% of the parents want this here in New Britain. So we're not anticipating a big shift. Earlier, just a few months ago, we weren't sure what the outcome of this law would be, and we were afraid that we'd see a swell of extra kids in pre-K and then a shortage of kids in kindergarten. But now that we've had a chance to survey our parents, we think there'll be a little bit of a bump there, a little bit of a shift, but not one that is as scary as we thought it might have been early on, at least from a financial perspective.
Right, because the alternative is, you know, these kids really kind of miss a year of education, right? They're sitting at home or, you know, who knows what the case may be. So, you know, with that early childhood development, we always all know that. That's so crucial.
Yeah, and you know, and again, that's another thing that varies greatly from city and town to the ones next door. What we heard very early on was a lot of concern really about the cost of childcare. So mm-hmm. for some parents, this would have meant an extra year of paying for childcare versus getting into kindergarten. You know, again, we've got a lot of good providers here in town to help with that. And again, I think it's, as we've said often, it's a well-intended law. I understand why it was passed and what it means for kids, but districts are struggling right now with we're going to do it in the best way we know how for
sure.
New Britain, but if you've got friends who live next door in Newington or Cheshire, you might find that it's being done quite differently, and they're doing it in the way that they think is right.
Right.
So
and that's where I think the decision should be made, you know, in the local districts, in the local government, because, you know, to have this one size doesn't always fit all.
Sure.
Right.
Sure.
All right. Well, we've got just about a minute left. What is like your key message for our listeners out there? What if there's one thing that you could say to the folks listening to this program, what would it be?
So we really enjoy it when parents are engaged. So when you hear about your school, whether that be everything from pre-K up through high school, is having some type of parent event, whether it's a fun event or an instructional event, come learn about our curriculum kind of event. We really enjoy having parents in our schools because it helps us build that connection, and it also teaches us about how we want to get better. What are the things that we want to offer in the future for the kids in New Britain?
That's great. Well, I got to give you a quick example. So my granddaughter, I encouraged her to play the trumpet in fifth grade. So she had a concert. Her mom and dad couldn't go. So I said, I'm jumping on a plane to Texas. I went to the concert. It was 15 minutes long, and she played in two songs. You know what it still was? Priceless.
Yeah, very
priceless.
Cool. Very nice.
Dr. Tony Gasper, thank you so much for shedding some light on what's going on in our public school system. Continued success in New Britain. You're doing a great job. And I think the bottom message here is get involved. Grandparents, parents, caregivers, you know what's going on, because if you don't know what's going on, you can't complain about it, right? Well, of course, we couldn't do this without you, so thanks to all of you for tuning in to this edition of News You Can Use right here on WTIC. Again, I'm Ann Baldwin. We'll talk to you next weekend.